Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is Thursday, August 30th, 2012. This is a community conference call where we get together to answer questions from the community that have been posted on our forums, as well as anybody, time permitting, who has additional questions or follow-ups. We do this call every other Thursday. By participating in this call, you do not become our clients, and we do not become your lawyers. This is just an information exchange. Make sure you understand that this call is being recorded, and it will be made publicly available, so that if you wish to conceal your identity or wish to not reveal certain things about yourself, please feel free to do so. I have 14, 15 questions posted. That should take me about 20, 25 minutes to go through. In addition to that, if you folks have follow-ups and then new questions, we will deal with them in that order. Okay, here we go. First question is from Somyu JS, who wants to know about EB3 to EB2 conversion. Somyu, if you are on this call, I would appreciate it if you log in next Thursday, which is exactly 7 days from today, I guess. That's September 7th. Log in next Thursday. I am doing a very focused conference call just on all issues related to EB3 to EB2 conversion, because this question has come up so many times, much more so for some reason in the last few weeks than I've had to deal with in the last few years. So if it's okay with you, I would like to take up your questions in that call. Log in, and we'll go over all your EB3 to EB2 concerns at that time. And what I'll do is I'll start that call off with your questions first. But if you cannot wait, then I will, of course, answer your questions now to the best of my ability. Okay? So if you are on the call, please press 5-star if you are on the call. Press 5-star so I can see you. 5-star, Somyu, if you are here. Okay. And then let's deal with it next Thursday. Okay? Next question is from Vinu. Who is talking about F1 to H1B stamping. They are on H1B during about a 35, 36, 37-day period. They did not work. Would that be considered to be out of status? Well, let's see. You were in Tri-Valley, then January 19th, TVU got shut down. Got receipt of the H-1B on 26th Jan. Then Jan 20th to 29th, you did not work. You know, in a situation like this, there are a lot of things that are uncertain. What I do typically is I tend to err on the side of caution. I tell the government, yes, I was out of status. Remember, being out of status is not a ground for denial of an H-1B visa. Okay. I don't want anybody to say tomorrow that, oh, you concealed information from us. You see my point? So I would err on the side of more disclosure and say, yes, I was out of status, and then if asked, provide them a full explanation. Okay? I want to go to India in the month of December. Can I go for stamping in Canada since I already have a master's degree from USA? Well, you know, you can always go to Canada, but bear in mind that Canada, the consulates in Canada can refuse to take your application if you have been out of status for even one day. And the interesting thing is that so far they have not done that in any cases that I know of, so they should accept your application, and you can apply in Canada. But if you go to Canada, go prepared to fly out to India from Canada in case they refuse to either take your application or deny your visa. Okay? So just fly out to India from there. What are my chances of getting stamped? EVC model, I'm not sure what that means. I guess it must mean a consulting company. I can only guess. I have a video on this, on H-1 visa stamping, or maybe it's some written material on my blogs. It's not easy to get H-1 visa stamping, okay? And we have seen a lot of cases where people were working with the same client and yet after a couple of years were denied the H-1 visa, okay? Difficult to predict, but try in Canada first. Mina, 21, more than 180 days stay on visitor visa in a year, but not beyond I-94. An impact on green card application. So mother came to U.S. on a tourist visa twice in a year, and it adds up to more than 180 days. So how does it impact the green card? The answer is it does not. It does not. Green card is not impacted at all by stay, which is not unlawful. Okay? Future entries can be affected. Government can take the claim. Next time she comes to USA, they can say, hey, it looks like you are living in USA and visiting India because you are living here more than 180 days and living in India less than 180 days. Okay. So they can refuse her entry and they can try to give her a hard time. Very typically, they shouldn't do that with parents of US citizens, but you never know. It's within their rights to do so. Okay, so just be careful with that. That's what I would be concerned about. Let me just confirm one more time that everybody can hear me. Guys, everybody can hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Okay. It happened to me one time.
Yes, but if you can come closer to the mic. Sometimes you cut off at the end when you are finishing your sentence, so you cut off.
Okay, yeah, my problem is I'm wearing a headphone. I'm recording from two different devices. So let me just, yeah, okay, thank you for letting me know that. Let me see if I can make that better for you. Okay. But, you know, at the end of the call, you can always ask me to repeat anything you want. So just one second. I'm going to put you all on mute again.
Conference muted.
Actually, even better, folks. If you guys can all put your phones on mute, that might be even easier. Then I don't have to mute you. And that way, if I'm messing up somewhere, you just unmute yourself and say, Rajiv, speak up and we can't hear you or something like that, right? I'm not muting anybody. Right now, everybody is unmuted. Just mute yourselves. Okay, so talking about mom again, I'm not concerned that she was here more than 180 days and it's going to be any problem for green card, no problem. For future entries, yes, but problem as far as green card, no issue at all. I'm planning to file for my mother in 2013 after I become a U.S. citizen. Question one, if she stays beyond 180 days in the U.S. this year, will it adversely impact her application for green card? No. We plan to file for a green card next year using AOS while she's visiting us in 2013. How long does she need to stay in India before she can make a repeat visit to USA in 2013? That's the tricky part. That's the part I'm concerned about. Because if she comes back too quickly, CBP is within their rights to deny her entry. Another thing you want to be careful about is if somebody enters on a tourist visa, they should not have a preconceived intention, a preformed intention of applying for a green card. The USCIS can take an objection to that. I know that they have not done that so far ever, but the potential does exist. So just keep that in mind. There should not be any preconceived intention, but if she comes here and then you decide to do it, it's okay to convert her to green card. Another interesting thing about U.S. citizens is, and I'm not saying you take that route, but just to inform you of your rights, if a U.S. citizen's immediate relative, child, parent, or just one second. U.S. citizens' immediate relative, even if they are unlawfully present in USA, let's say they stay in USA for 10 years illegally beyond their I-94 expiration, If they were to leave USA, they'll be subject to 10-year bar. But if the U.S. citizen gets them their green card within USA, there is no bar. So you could do an AOS for such an individual and get them a green card within USA. That's an interesting situation. So in other words, immediate family of U.S. citizens does not get affected even by unlawful presence as long as they don't travel outside and get their green card first. I hope that helps you understand the situation, Meenaji. Next question is EB3 to EB2 again. Mani, are you on this call? I have just requested people who have EB3 to EB2 questions, conversion questions, to log in next Thursday, 7 days from now. Same time, same phone numbers, everything. So we are going to do a special call next Thursday just devoted to EB3 to EB2 conversions. If you are here, why don't you speak up?
Yes, Rajiv, I'm here.
Can Thanks you wait till us. Next week, or do you want me to answer your questions now, Mani?
Fine. We can go over the remaining questions.
Yeah, what I'll do is, next week when we talk, I'll first read these two questions. The first one that I read and yours, and I'll answer those first. Okay, you have some other questions. Let me take a look at that. We are working on preparing the I-140. Can this be done with premium? Yes. You can do premium, sure.
Thank you.
We have to specify the pending EB3 information during the I-140, or should there be a separate letter sent after the... That I'll answer next time when we talk. Huh?
Sure.
When I started filing for EB2 case, attorney mentioned not to file AC-21. I'll just explain that to you also. But what is the relationship between AC-21 and EB2 filing? It's a very interesting relationship. And not a lot of lawyers plan for that. The good ones do. And I like to believe a lot of them do, but then a lot of them don't, and I see the results also. Okay? So we'll talk about this next week, okay?
Thank you, Rajiv.
All right, Mani. Good luck. Next question is Dimitri, who wants to know multiple perms. Yes, sir, you can have as many perm applications as you like in good faith through as many employers as you like. It's just not a good idea to file multiple perms through the same employer. And just because you have multiple perms pending should not in any way jeopardize any one of the perm applications. Okay? I hope that answers your questions. Next question is from N-Yokes. Oh, DV, I'm sorry. I don't do DVs. We actually, as a firm, decided a good 10, 15 years ago not to do DV cases because in most of these cases, a lawyer is not needed. So, but let me just see. Oh, okay, so your question is not really about DV. It's a lot more other things, actually. Let's see. I'm a 2010 DV winner. I've got my green card, living in a foreign country. Can I travel to USA together with my family for 2 weeks, activate our green card, then return? The problem is, if you don't establish your permanent residence in USA, your green card can be taken away. If you go to my blog, you will see there's a video on abandonment of green card. Review it very carefully. Then get back to me again. Also review the video on filing of form I-131, and N-470. These two videos are all together. You need to understand the implications of not making your permanent home in USA. Okay? Watch these two videos, and then let's talk again in 2 weeks. But the bottom line is, your permanent home must be in USA. You can take a temporary permission to stay away from USA. Read the instructions on Form I-131. But don't be fooled. It is not guaranteed to work. Make sure you also watch the two videos that I mentioned, one on abandonment of permanent residence and the other one on Form I-131 and 470. Okay? So next question is Imi Ralphs. I was working with Employer X for 5 years. I have an I-140 approval. Company X financially, it was not doing well. Transferred to employer Y, working with client Z. Okay. So So got the I-14, then you came to India in Feb 2012. Visa stamping is stuck into 21G, and you're still working for client Z. So you went from X to Y, but the Z remains the same, okay? Can client Z file H-1B exempt petition? Yes. Can they use the approved I-140? Yes. Yes. Okay. My employer, meanwhile, has processed my PERM. I'm assuming that employer Y. You can file an I-140. Can H-1B extension with Z and I-140 filing with Y be done at the same time? Yes. There can be a question raised that if you have the intention to work permanently with Y, why are you going to work for Z? In your case, the answer looks pretty obvious to me, that because you're not giving me a visa, I have no choice, so I'm stuck with having to work with the client. But if you have a good reason, that's what they're looking for. Okay? Vasudha wants to know, daughter is a citizen, and she has a good job. Husband is on H-1. I am on H-4. We are planning to do concurrent I-130 and 485. Daughter is filing 860 for my husband and 864 for me. Yes, that is correct. That is exactly how it's supposed to be. Two separate, complete separate applications, one for you, one for your husband. Okay? Independent, complete separate applications.
Hello, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Vasudha.
Vasudha ji, wait
yes.
till the end of the call. I will ask for questions, okay?
Okay.
Just hang tight. Right now, just put yourself on mute again, please. Let me finish the questions first.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Next is AKB Cool. F2 visa stamping after first rejection. So the rejection was because they did not believe you were married. Anything that makes it possible for you to convince the government that you are in fact married will help your F2 visa stamping. The only other kind of visa that can help is an H1 or an H4 type visa. But obviously she's not getting that. So F2 application should be made again. But when you do the F2 application, make sure you have good and ample proof that you are married. Wife's passport doesn't have my name on it. Would it be better if name is there? Yes. That helps as well. Is applying for F2 the right choice or any other visa? I already answered that. Is there anything else we can do to make our chances better? Yes. Anything that can prove your marriage is genuine. For example, wedding pictures, wedding invitation cards, affidavits from people who attended the wedding. If there was a... You must have a lot of pictures. Take all those pictures with you. Okay. How many times can someone appear for a visa interview in a year? There is no rule at the federal central level. Consulates make their own rules. They cannot stop you from applying. They can decline to personally interview you, but you can apply an unlimited number of times, technically speaking. However, consulates do make local rules, which are different in different places. Is the language of the interviewer material? I prefer English because that way you communicate directly with the consular officer. You don't have somebody in between interpreting what is being said. So I prefer English. But as it goes, it should not make any difference if there is an accurate translation of what is being said. Is sari, mangal sutra, sindoor, etc. going to help? I don't think so. My visa is due to expire in 4 months. Is that an issue? No, they should tell you if that's an issue. Can F1 visa stamping be done again from home country or Canada, Mexico? It can be done Canada, Mexico as well. EKIS wants to know, I entered the States on B1, B2. I was given 3 months on my I-94. But my goods were seized because of some error. Okay. So what you did was you applied for extension of stay for 6 months. And you did it within the time period of your I-94. In other words, before your I-94 expired, your application was received by USCIS, the extension application. If that is so, you did not accrue unlawful presence. Okay. What happened was your extension of stay was sent to you, but you never got it. Approval was sent, covered 6 months of extra stay, which ended on August 27, 2009. You departed on 23rd January. So August through January, this is September, October, November, December, January. If it is more than 180 days, you have stayed extra 5 months, which is less. See, less than 180 days is no problem. You should be fine. But if it is more than, if it is 180 days or more, then you have a problem. Did I accrue unlawful presence? Yes, you did. But you have a good explanation for it. By Jan 2013, I must have served the 3-year ban. That's okay too? Do I need to apply for a waiver of inadmissibility? No. If you are first, in the first place, if it's less than 180 days, you're not subject to the 3-year bar. In any case, you have already served the 3-year. So you should not have to apply for any kind of waiver. You just apply for a visa. Okay? They might want some explanation of why you overstayed, etc., but you have a very good explanation from what you're telling me. First, they seized your goods without any reason, and then you never received the extension of stay, etc. So, you know, I think you have a good explanation for it. Next question is Kunal 44, priority date stamping and travel-related questions. There are three slightly different topics. One was, person changes companies, has an I-140 from a previous company. Can we port the priority date? Absolutely. We do it all the time. Last few months, we've done it many, many times. Even when the previous employer has revoked the I-140. Okay. So, yes, we have done it successfully. So far, no problems. H-1B visa stamping related. I have a permanent residency in Australia. Can I get my H-1B visa stamped there? Yes, you can. When you go to get your permanent residency in Australia, you can get your H-1B visa stamped there also. Okay. Now, I'm also applying for an H-1 extension. Do I have to carry both approval notices? That's the best thing to do. What are the most common grounds on which visa stamping can be denied? H-1 visa stamping can be denied for the most ridiculous grounds. In fact, and again, this is on my blog, read up on it. We have made a complaint to some of the powers in the administration that the reasons the consulate gives are so ludicrous. They are so silly. I mean, the reason on the denial letter says, it appears that your employer is unwilling or unable to give you a job, so we are denying the visa. What kind of nonsense is that? Why would the employer spend $6,000-$7,000 on an H-1 if they were unwilling to give a job? And if they are unable to give a job, where is the evidence of that? So they'll find any excuse, and sometimes no excuse at all. How long can a person stay outside to remain in H-1B status? There is no limit. As long as the job is available, as long as the H-1 job is available, you can stay as long as you like. Obviously, my employer would not generate my salary in the above case. That's no problem. You don't have to be paid when you're outside USA. That's okay as well. Also, currently, I'm waiting for dates to be current to file 485. What if I don't have latest pay stubs? That's okay. If you have a good explanation, they should be able to accept the 485 if you are in USA, even if you don't have a few pay stubs for the time that you were outside USA. Can a person on EAD maintain their status outside? Yes, as long as they still have a job in USA, the same job through which they are being sponsored. Yaza wants to know, affidavit in lieu of marriage certificate for I-130. Parents are visiting. Their I-94 expires in December. I want to apply for their green card. Okay, now the problem is we don't have the marriage certificate. You can submit affidavits from two people who were at the marriage, who were present at the marriage. They don't have to be adults when they were at the marriage, as long as they were present at the marriage, you can provide affidavits from those two people. Okay. Is there an acceptable format of an affidavit that I can use with confidence? Send me an email. We'll send you a sample. You can send an email through the contact us form and just say, Rajiv, you had said in today's conference that you'll send me a sample affidavit. We'll send you the sample. Okay, next question is BBN, approved I-130 but married now. Now, this is a sibling. So their sister applied for them. They are in Canada, and their green card time has come. So I need to update my address as well as marital status with NVC. Is there any delay because the I-130 is already approved? No, it shouldn't be a problem. The good news is your wife will be automatically included in the process as long as you do the paperwork with NVC. So nothing special needs to be done. Just contact NVC. They'll tell you what to do. Okay. And the last question I have for today is Prasad, who wants to know about a 212D3 waiver, which are, by the way, the weakest waivers ever. Essentially, you're asking the consulate to give you a break. And that's pretty much it. These are not waivers that give me any sense of confidence because 212D3 is completely at the discretion of the U.S. consulate. How long does it take to process these waiver cases? A few months, difficult to say. Is there any alternative source to find the status? No. Congressman, you can try. I just feel very uncomfortable when you have so much riding on the discussion of the consulate. I don't like the idea of, you know, shaking the street too much. So if you get absolutely impatient, yeah, go ahead and do that. But I'm inclined to wait it out. Okay? That being said, now I have finished the questions that we had posted for the day. I want to hear from people who have follow-up questions like Vasudhaji. Press 5-star on your phone. 5-star, and I will call upon you in turn. Press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. If you have any follow-up question.
Hey, Rajiji.
Yeah, 1 second. I guess nobody's pressing 5-star. Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead? Who are you, sir?
Hey. Hey, and this is Somu JS. Sorry, I missed the call in the first 2 minutes of the conference.
Oh, Somu, you had the EB3 to EB2 conversion question.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
What I want you to do is, what I said was that I don't want to answer EB3 to EB2 questions today.
Okay.
What I want to do is next Thursday at 12:30, we are doing a call only for EB3, EB2 questions.
Okay.
And what I will do is, I will take your question first.
Okay.
So if that's okay with you, sharp 12:30 next Thursday, let's talk about it.
Okay. Sorry, I missed the call. First 2 minutes,
no,
so that's my
all,
first
that's
question.
All I had to
so
say. Yeah, but if you have something urgent, I can answer it now.
No, just in general, in my situation, will I be eligible for EB2 with this situation?
At your situation. Samu JS, 45 pending on EB3, company 12 years. Yeah. Theoretically, at least, you're able to get an EB2.
Okay.
So I'll explain the rest to you next time. But, yeah,
okay.
You can get an EB2. You are qualified.
Okay. Qualification does not matter, right? I have B from India.
Well, you have a 4-year bachelor's degree and 12 years of experience. Yeah, you should be able to qualify. Okay. But I'll explain the rest to you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. All right, now
Rajiv, I just want to ask you, does anybody have to press star 5 times or they have to press 5 and then star?
Good question. Just press 5-star once.
Excuse me.
Yeah, wait. I have 5 questions in front of me. Let me get started on that. Everybody else, put yourselves on mute, please. Everybody put yourself on mute. Thank you. Okay. Area code 201. Go ahead with your question, please. Area code 201.
This is Kunal. You mentioned a few things. First of all, I had some questions where, you know, maintaining the status, and even if you're outside India, and you don't have PayStubs, you can apply for any of the further GC processes or the extension or H1 stuff. But you mentioned one thing alongside, saying that as long as you have the job in the U.S. So, I mean, obviously when a person is not in U.S., that would mean that he is not having a job in U.S. as well, because, that's what I'm sure. In that scenario, what happens?
Let me explain to you what I mean. Mm-hmm. Let's say I get hired as a programmer by the company.
The H1 company who is filing a GC, right?
Right. Let's start with the H1 company. I get hired by a company to do programming work for them. Now, what happens is, when I leave USA, that company must be able to show that they still have that job available when you come back.
Agreed, but some mostly, situations are that when H1 company, like a person of a huge company, then normally they put you on some client site, through some other prime vendor. So in that situation, if you are not there on that client site for more than 3 months, obviously the client would make a new person. So
you are making a fundamental error in understanding what a job is, quote-unquote job, in consulting. In consulting companies, the job is not tied to a particular project. The job is tied to an expectation of several projects that are going on, and they can place you on. So the idea is they'll still hire you back. They have work for you.
Got it. So they can get to show that, we have work for the person, and he should be back. Even though he is not PSL, does not have PSL, they think that's fine. He can be
absolutely.
He can be.
And if they want to place you, let's say, instead of California, they want to place you in Minnesota, they can just do an H-1B amendment before they bring you back in.
Okay. But only there's a little bit of a difficulty situation is for some Minnesota. They have to show the client. But for that, normally I have to be there in Minnesota beforehand and make myself available, saying that, yes, I'm ready to work.
Technology,
so,
unfortunately, under the U.S. immigration laws, no employer is allowed to bring an employee into USA without a definite project.
Okay. All right, sir. Makes sense. Yeah. So a couple of other related stuff. Obviously, you mentioned.
Hello. Yeah. What is
that? This is Kunal. I still had a couple of follow-up questions.
Right.
You mentioned good thing that, priority date can be ported even if the your employer has revoked it. I know you said you have good a number of examples, but the reason I was, I felt that a lot of forums are telling otherwise. The people who have experienced this, maybe they didn't have good lawyers. There are people in the forum who said that they couldn't port their priority date because their previous employer revoked it. So can I just, probably disregard them and, since you have...
You can drop me an email. I will confirm that from our team. But I'm fairly certain that we've had no issues porting priority dates in the last few months.
Okay. All right,
see,
sir.
I
often
hear about problem cases. Whenever there's a problem, of course, the team is going to bring it to me. So I haven't heard of anything, and we do a lot of these kind of cases, so I'm quite sure we've had no problems. There was a 6-month time period, about 7-8 months ago, when things were very uncertain. They were denying some cases, approving some cases, but now, after that, they actually came out and said it, that no, we are going to allow the porting.
Okay, sir, all right.
I have a video on that, you can go watch it.
Sure. I'll drop an email as well, just so that you can confirm with your team. All right. Regarding the stamping stuff, we mentioned that, obviously we can go to Canada these days and get stamping done. There was confirmed information that does Canada allow you to come back on your approved 797 form, even if your visa does not get approved there?
It is not allowed. What you need to do is Google the words automatic visa revalidation.
Yes, sir, I did that, that's why the question was,
if the visa is denied, technically you are not allowed to come back. I know people who came in because even CBP doesn't know the law. However, they are not supposed to let you in if the visa is denied. You're supposed to fly back to India from there.
Okay. So ideally not, but there may be a chance when somebody doesn't know, he can let you in. So that's the, all right.
Well, I have my next question, okay?
So sure, thanks. Thank you.
Good luck.
Yeah.
All right. Next question, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people. Let's begin with area code 905. Please go ahead, 905.
Yeah, this is regarding question number 13, approved I-20 but married now.
1 second, sir. Let me just...
Yeah.
11, 12, 13.
Just a quick question.
Affidavit in lieu of marriage?
No, it's approved I-130.
Yeah, approved I-130 but married now.
Yeah, so in this case, I just have to inform, like, by email or by phone to NVC.
They might have some additional forms for you to fill out.
Uh-huh.
Okay, including maybe an additional affidavit of support. So you want to contact the NVC and find out what formalities you have to fulfill.
Okay, and that will not delay in any case.
It should not delay too much, maybe a few weeks, but not too much now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Oh,
appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome. Okay, area code 510. Everybody put yourself on mute, please. Area code 510.
Hey, Rajiv, this is Bilal Singh. I have a different question. I'm not following up. So is it okay? Shall I ask a question or shall I ask later?
Let me finish the follow-ups first. Hang tight. Okay.
Okay.
Next, area code 732. Go ahead, please. 732-322.
Hi, Rajivji. This is a question regarding that waiver status, to find the status on 212D3 waiver.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. I couldn't hear you what you were saying when you were answering.
Okay. My answer to you was, I would rather wait until I have no choice at all, because 212D3 waivers are very weak waivers. They are completely a matter of discretion of the government.
Okay.
So if the consulate wants to deny the case, they can very easily do that. Why, hound them with status requests? You can send them an email, find out what's going on, you know, but I would not want to involve a congressman's office at this point of time.
Okay. So involving congressman is not suggestible in these cases?
Not at this time, I don't think so.
Okay. Right. Usually, I mean, is there any approximate time?
There is absolutely no approximate time. 212D3 waivers can take any amount of time, 6 months, 12 months, difficult to say. Some 212D3 waivers from Canada get done within a matter of day or two. So it depends.
Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay. Next one is, there must be a voice over IP. You logged in at 12:32. I don't see a phone number.
Sir, it could be me. I'm calling from office. This is
yes.
Regarding the question about my mom visiting US for more than 180
number,
days.
Do you know? Which question?
It was question number 3.
Number 3. 1 second. Let me get there. 654, question number 3.
Mom staying for more than 180 days on visitor's visa.
Oh, okay. Actually, number 4. All right.
Sorry.
Got it.
So I did hear most of the answer that you were saying. I had one question, though. So you did mention that, so my mom has never stayed beyond the date on I-94, but
sure.
We're trying to get her back in. And you said the only thing that could happen is potentially at the port of entry, she could be denied the entry, saying that you're staying here more in U.S. than actually in India.
Right.
So my concern was, sir, like if she's denied, say, entry this year when she comes back,
right.
And how does it impact, and would they make her return from the port, or would they give her fewer days to stay here? How does that work?
Just 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so your question is, if she tries to enter, return her at the airport, and the answer is they can.
Okay.
Normally, they are not that mean. But they can be, it is within their right to do that.
Okay. And if that's the case, sir, next year, if she tries to come again, would that impact her entry next year?
But you realize that you can apply for her green card and bring her on green card. It takes less than 12 months usually.
Okay. So the thing with her is like she's not doing well, so she's not keeping well. So we want her to be here on visitors and then after some time apply for the green card so that, you know, she's here with us at that time. So the entry next year is very critical for us. Do you think if she's denied entry this year on a visitor's visa, would it also impact next year when she tries to come back?
It can. It certainly can. Because if one has been denied entry once, it can raise issues in any subsequent entry. So if you want to be completely sure of next year's entry, then go ahead and just apply for her green card.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, got it. Thank you.
That's what I would do if it was my mom.
Okay, yeah, the only thing is I don't have my citizenship yet. I'm going to get it next year, and that's when I can apply.
Well, you know, you can take a risk, see if they're trained, you know?
Yeah.
And then the only problem I have is I don't like the idea of the preconceived intention. If she enters not with the intention of staying, but later on changes her mind, that's okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Area code 612. Go ahead, please. Area code 612. Area code 612. 207.
Hello, Raju. Yeah, my name is Srikant, and I have a question regarding the citizenship for my parents.
Hang on. If it's a new question, I'm going to ask you to hold just a minute. Let me finish the ones that have not been. I'm just a follow-up. Okay, just one second.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Put yourself on mute, please. Area code 212-343. 123. Okay. Area code 301.
Hi, Rajiv. This is a new question, so I'll stand.
Okay. I'm going to put everybody on mute again. Please, everybody put yourself on mute. All right. We're going to start all over. Now, the old questions are over. So anybody who has any questions, new, old, future, past, present.
Hello, Rajiv.
Hello, Rajivji. I have the old question.
I am not done. I'm not done yet. If you have an old question, stay on the phone. Everybody else, press 5-star on your phone. Press the number 5 and star. Everybody who has a new question, press 5-star. I don't see you. Everybody press.
Hello, Rajiv.
1 second, sir. 1 second, please. Okay. All right. I've got 5 new questions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 new people. Okay. People with the old questions, go ahead one by one, please.
Hello, I'm Sudha. I just wanted to know whether in one packet I keep two files, one for my husband and one for me, and send it to a Chicago office.
What kind of case is this?
My daughter is a citizen, and I'm on H-4, and my husband is on H-1. And we are concurrently filing the I-30 and I-485.
You can
adjustment.
Put, ma'am, what I would want you to do is put two separate envelopes in one envelope. So like if you are FedEx,
in one envelope?
Put two separate envelopes in one FedEx enclosure.
Okay. And
okay.
Two separate covering letters.
Yeah, of course, covering letter doesn't cost you anything. Why is that an issue?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And 864 for each of us, right? Not 864A.
864 it will be, yeah. I-864. Regular.
Because my husband is working, so still he'll require 864,
I-864.
Right?
I-864.
No, affidavit of support.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much.
Your daughter will give affidavit of support, separate ones, each one support.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, all right. Any more old questions?
Yes, Mr. Mr. Khanna,
yeah.
This is AKB Cool, question number 10.
Question number 10, one second.
The F2 visa reapply after rejection?
Of course, I got it.
So my question is, like you mentioned that any other visa applying would be H1, H4, but would a visitor visa, a B2 visa would be an option?
No, not an option. Actually, a very poor option.
Oh, it's a very poor option?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, sir, another question that I have is, like, regarding my visa is expiring in 4 months. So if I travel to Canada or Mexico to get a new F1 visa, would I be able, if in case I'm denied, would I be able to enter back if my current visa is still valid?
If your visa is still valid, you are allowed back, yes.
Yeah, like my current visa, and I'm not able to get a new visa in that scenario. Also, I'm able to enter?
Yes, you are allowed back. The only
okay.
exception would be if they cancel your visa before they take on the next visa application. They're supposed to do that, but they usually don't. So if you have a valid visa stamp on your passport, you can come back. AVR people can't come back, but people with visa stamp can.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, sir. Anybody has any old questions?
I have a question. I actually asked this question in the EB2 page as a post, and I got a very short answer. I posted, I'm the software engineer from Italy, and I posted all my degree, my master degree and everything, and the reply was the EB2 was doubtful.
I answered your question day before yesterday. You have a three-year bachelor's degree and 2 years master's degree and less than 5 years of experience.
And, I have 6 years of experience from 2007, March 2007. So in March it's going to be 6 years. And
okay.
Can you tell me why it's doubtful and what can I do to?
Hang on 1 second.
Yeah.
You have a three-year bachelor's degree after 12 years of school?
Yes.
Okay, 12 years.
I am at the Italian style. So, 12 years of 12 years of school is 13 years of school, not 12, 13.
Okay. Then when did
I have 13.
Then when did you finish your master's degree?
I finished my master's degree in April 2009. But I was already working for this company in USA here in the Boston area since 2007.
Sir,
so I was studying.
Yeah, let me just finish my comment. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
EB2 will be possible only if your master's degree is equivalent to a US master's degree. If it is not, then you have to wait until 5 years of progressive experience after your master's degree is complete.
Just one quick question. How can I find out if my master's degree is in software engineering, so it's a pretty advanced master's degree?
How can I find out? You should contact or have your lawyers contact an education evaluation agency.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them to do, write this down, and
yep.
AACRAO, ACRAO, AACRAO.
A, can you repeat it, please?
AACRAO.
AACRAO.
American Association of Collegiate Registrars and Admissions Officers.
Mm-hmm.
ACRAO/EDGE, EDGE. That's the name of their database. ACRAO EDGE Evaluation. Actually, you can even contact ACRAO. They do evaluation.
Okay.
If you just type ACRAO on Google, they come right up.
Okay.
Just tell them to give you an evaluation for your master's degree.
Okay. And if that apply, I'm eligible for EB2, right?
Oh, absolutely. Then as you tell me,
okay. Okay. Can I just ask another question? Is if for any reason I'm not eligible right now, 5 years after my master's degree are going to do in April 2014, right? Because I graduated in 2009, April. So in 2014, April, I'm going to be able to have 5 years of progressive experience. Yeah. If I start now an EB3 and it's approved, the I-40 is approved, can I, in April 2014, switch to the...
The answer is, I have to move on. I took you out of turn. The answer is yes. If you want more detail about it, join me next Thursday, same time. I'm going to discuss EB3 to EB2 conversions.
That's perfect. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, going back to the queue, people who have their hands up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. Let's start with, and I'm going to do 5 more calls, guys, after that we are done. I've got to go. Area code 972. Go ahead, please. Area code 972. 972-518. Yeah, go ahead. Hello?
Okay. Mr. Khanna, that was AKB Cool. I already asked my question. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Next is area code 510. Go ahead, please. 510.
Hi, Rajiv. This is my new question, not follow-up question. So am I allowed to go ahead?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I have two questions, actually, two cases, different cases. Regarding myself, I have a green card. I just got a recently green card about a couple of months ago, and now I'm planning to get married. And my I'm looking for a bride, which is in back in Pakistan, home country. So the problem is, if I apply for her sponsorship, it's going to take longer, about 6-7 years, to get her into the United States. So if I get married with somebody who has a visitor visa, and I get married here in the United States with her, is it okay for her to change the, for me to change her, apply for change of status, and then live along with her, or would I have to send her back and then apply in a home country and then bring her back, so that will take longer again, and I will be separated for her with her for about, you know, a couple of years. So can you help with that? This is the first question. And the second question is, my mom is citizen, but definitely she's about 70 years of old age, so she does not work. Now, can she apply for her son, married son, who is in Pakistan, and I can you know, attach my affidavit support in order for him to get the green card or sponsorship? These are the two questions. Can you please answer?
Sure. The first question, whether you marry somebody on B1, B2, or whether you marry somebody in Pakistan, the amount of time it takes is the same. Okay? Because if somebody is on B1, B2, and you get married here and you want them to stay here, they cannot. They would be illegal in USA. The only time they could be legal is if their priority date is current and you apply for their 485. So if the priority date is backed up, whether they are here or they are in Pakistan makes absolutely no difference. Is that clear?
Okay.
Your best bet would be to get married to somebody who's on H1 or L1.
Okay.
Okay. As far as giving an affidavit for your brother, no problem. That's perfectly okay. Your mom will provide an affidavit of support, but you will be the co-sponsor based upon which the affidavit will be successful. So, yes, that's perfectly okay.
Sounds good. And do you have any idea how long is it taking these days to, you know, get approved?
For visa, you mean for the green card?
Yes.
Or for brother?
Yeah, for brother, yes.
Just go to the visa bulletin on our website.
Okay.
I don't remember the dates off the top of my head, but it'll tell you what the dates are currently. Visa bulletin.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, next question is area code 510-962. Or did I just finish that? 510-962. Okay. Next question, area code 212648. 12648. Okay. Next question, area code 301. Area code 301.
301257.
Okay.
Oh, hi, Roger. Thank you for taking my question. This is regarding U.S. citizenship for my parents. They have been permanent residents since October 10th, 2007, but they have pretty much traveled every year. Most of the trips were less than 180 days, except one trip where there was a health issue, and that has to stay several days. Actually, it was more than 180 days. That was in 2008. So I just want to check if I apply for the U.S. citizenship, would there be any issues with that?
Yes. As long as they meet the following day, immediately 5 years before filing the naturalization application, they must have been physically present in USA for 2.5 years. Number one, physical presence of half the time, 2.5 years. Number two, if their stay was more than 6 months but less than 1 year, that outside must be. If there was a health issue, you have a good explanation, no problem.
Okay. The total number of days was 810 days in the last 5 years. So it was four different trips. And one of the trips was longer than 6 months.
So how much does that? I'm just concerned about the physical presence. I'm very poor with math. Tell me, do they meet the 2.5 year physical presence?
I think they were, yes. It looks like they were 2.5 to 6.
Well, you can delay it a few months.
Seven,
right? Because it's the last 5 years.
Yes, they actually do meet more, the 2.5 year stipulated criteria. Just a follow-up on that is if the mother can't speak English, she has difficulty understanding the accent, she has a little English speaking skills. Would that be a problem if we apply for the citizenship and the test has to be? Is there something that we can do to waive the test?
There is a waiver available. Look at the USCIS as well as our own website. But that's for people with advanced age or some physical infirmity. There is a cutoff date. You must be over X number of years of age and be a U.S. immigrant for X number of years. So there's a couple of options there. See if she meets them. Otherwise, she has to learn.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rajiv. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome. All right, guys, I have the last question of the day. This seems like a call from overseas. Looks like India.
Yes.
9180 something something. Are you here?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Mr. Rajiv.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, this question is regarding an F1 visa status. I was a grad student in one of the top universities in 2010 for a PhD program. Had some personal difficulty with my father's health and my mom's demise, so I had to return back to India without my master's degree, citing the reason I got leave of absence from the program. And I started working here, and then I reapplied for grad programs because I couldn't get funding in the same venue. Right now I have a master's admit with funding from a different university, which is like a decent university, very good university, I would say. I'm reapplying for visa. I understand the visa status is... Hello?
Yeah, guys, everybody else, mute yourselves, please. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So I understand the visa status is now tied to that university, so as the service records. Will I face some issues with a visa approval, considering that I'm from a PhD program, I'm rejoining a master's program, and then...
Yes, I understand your situation. There can be a problem. The consulate is very, very suspicious of people who go from a higher program to a lower program. But if you have a good explanation of what happened and why you are doing it, then your chances are as good as anybody else's. It all depends upon your explanation.
Because since when I joined the PhD program, that is a direct PhD program, and then I had to return before 1 year completion, after one semester and 3 months. So,
as long as you have a good explanation, I understand what you are saying, but the consulate is going to ask you about that. So be prepared for your answer, a truthful answer, and whatever documentation you can bring to back it up.
Sure. The current admit is funded admit, so I hope that would aid my cause in some way.
I certainly hope so, and I think that the university is a reputable university would also help.
Would it be a good idea to share the conversation with the OIE of the previous university regarding the leave of absence, as well as the current communication that I have with the professors in the current university regarding my admission?
What is the communication about?
Regarding, for instance, the current communication regarding the funding that I'm going to do a research assistantship with a professor, one of the professors in the current university.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. You can take a printout of that. What else do you have?
Regarding the leave of absence as well as the medical certificates.
Was the medical certificate for yourself?
No, not for myself.
For mom, dad, somebody in the family?
Dad.
Yes, I think that would help as well.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, one more question, quick question, that when I left, I had a $1,000 repayment that I didn't do when I left the United States.
Private credit has no bearing on visa stamping.
Okay.
Unless you owe money to the government, in which case you have a problem. But if you owe money to the credit card company, nobody cares.
Okay.
All right? Good luck to you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for being here. I'll see you in, actually, most of you in 2 weeks, some of you next week about the EB3, EB2 call. Bye-bye.